Well, welcome to the Don Cherry Grapevine Podcast. Everything Dad.
Who's the new sponsor?
We were going to have MyBookie, who was an online betting website, but they called up and said since there's no sports and the only thing to bet on is the U.S. election so far, they said, we'll wait. So maybe when the leagues come back, we'll get MyBookie back going.
Good.
But even though there's not much sports on, there was big news in football.
Well, you know, all my buddies in Boston, I talked to buddies that they're a little ticked off. They wanted Brady to hang around, but and the word was that the reason that he left was because of the coach. The coach did not want him, and Belichick, he thinks of the ship. The ship is the team, and he figured that. I mean, he did get pounded a lot last year, and
but I gotta go off a little topic with Belichick that. He kind of reminds me of Mike Babcock in a way where he kind of treats the media a little aloof and maybe he dismisses them. And he can do that when he wins. But if the Patriots start to lose, I wonder if the boss of media is waiting.
Yeah, but he doesn't care. It doesn't seem as if he cares one way or another. He didn't care when he was a rookie starting out, but... Boy, they can make or break you. Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, just like, you know, again, when Babcock left, just the way the media treated him was just awful. And I'm thinking, boy, you know, Belichick, like he does those short grunt answers and the guy, you know, that just must irk that Boston.
Well,
media.
You know what, I tell you, Tim, when I coached, I always thought this way. They were fair to me. They were, and Boston, they were really fair. I mean, there was times I should have been fired. I mean, really, I go into a tantrum and... here's what I figured. I figured they had a job to do, and if they're fair, and they were always fair in Rochester, eh, Cindy?
You took care of the press, and tell us a story. Remember the one story that you were friends with the one, and he couldn't get to the game.
Oh yeah,
and all that.
I won't give his name.
You won't give his name, but that's a great story, and that's the type of relationship you had with the press in Boston.
Oh, okay. And what happened was that he came to me and the morning skate, and he says, geez, he says, I don't want to go to the game tonight. He says, I got a hot number. And he says, you know, and here I am. I have to go and watch the Toronto Maple Leafs and I'm giving it away. But anyway, Toronto Maple Leafs and the Boston Bruins, you know, I said, okay, all right, here's the deal. You go ahead. And this is what I'll say if we lose. And this, which we never lost in Toronto, very seldom we lost in Toronto, but this is what I'll say. And so he went and he did what he had to do.
And you had the quote, if they were going to lose, you were going to say this. And if they won, you were going to say.
Yeah. And so the guy saw him and I said, geez, that's a pretty good quote you got from him. I don't remember even seeing you at the game.
But that's, I mean, you made probably a friend for life for the press. And well, I'm sure he told everyone that,
You know what's funny is we talk. I remember the morning skate. What they would do, they would line up because they have to do something in the afternoon. So in the morning skate, I stood on the ice and I answered all the questions. They were on the bench. They were on our bench, and you know they answered the questions like that. And I remember there's a little guy there, and when they'd all got, they thanks Grapes. Okay, we got everything we need. And I said, well, you want something? Who are you? And this little young kid said, "I didn't know what to say." He's like, "I'm Gord Stellick." He said, and he was just a kid then. He was just starting out. And I said, "Well, what do you want to know?" He was afraid to answer the question. Yeah, he's not now. He's doing a great job. But anyhow, you'd keep the press, and you're right, Belichick. If you treat them right, they'll treat you right. I think Hans Tanner. In Rochester was the best one of the best I ever saw. When I took over the Rochester Americans, I asked Bob Clark, who was one of the six owners. I said, how many players we got? He says one. I says who? He says you. Oh boy. So I went to see Hans Tanner, who was he wrote for the Democrat Chronicle over there, and he was a sports editor. And I don't know the editor or not, but anyhow, I said, the one guy I want in that club is a guy named Bob Kelly. And he looked at me and said, Jesus, you don't want Bob Kelly. He said, I think he played in Port Huron last year. I think he knocked out the coach or something like that. I said, boy, have we ever got Bob Kelly. And what he did was, and that's why I have such, I thought I had, till I went to Denver, and then it was a little different. The guy out there, anyhow, Hans got all the players. He was a scout when he got here. You need this guy, you need that guy, he's that. And he helped me out, and well, he was like a general manager.
So he was more than a newspaper
reporter.
No,
he was a good friend, too.
Well, like you said, he helped you. You didn't know where Battleship was, and he...
Yeah, and he looked it up.
He looked them up for you, yeah.
Yeah, and they're all great. And I remember my very first time in Boston, I get a call from Harry. He says, Tom Fitzgerald's up there, an Irish guy, and a beautiful Irish man. He's the only guy I ever knew, or first guy I ever knew that polished his nails. And he wasn't, he was a real boy. He was just spitting. He was mad. He's an Irish guy. And he says, and I'm sick of, so I go up and I sit down, and I have no idea. I'm just starting to coach. I'm sick and tired of this here. And he was just spitting. And he said, your star, your golden boy, he goes into the training room and everybody else goes with him, was Bobby. And the reason Bobby went in the room is because all the sports writers would be around him. I wouldn't talk to anybody else. So he thought, well, if I went in the room, then nobody else, they'd talk to somebody else, but they didn't. I said, okay, I'll have him stay. And I said, what that was? Like, why? I never went in the room when they went in. But Bobby stayed out, and boy, they were great. They were great sports writers in Boston.
And they knew sports. It's not like a lot of the sports writers. They knew what they were talking about.
And then I went to Denver. I didn't mind a guy giving me heck. I mean, you're supposed to get heck if you're not. And the guy that was a writer on the beat was he was a football young guy. I forget his name. No, never mind. Don't say his name. I know his name. I don't say it now. And he didn't like me, and I didn't even know the guy, but he was going to make his name, and he made his name all right, and we were losing, and I was, and we had a good club. In Colorado, we had a good club. That was the really, and we had Ray Mirren as a general manager. Wouldn't get us a goalie. We had our, but anyhow, the reporters have always been good, and you're right. Belichick, when he...
You better be prepared.
You better be prepared, I said, because if he doesn't win next year, they'll be waiting for him.
Well, you kind of went with Tom Brady leaving, I can imagine. I mean, he was...
Well, Orr was the same way.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You went through it twice.
Yeah, I went... We got rid of Phil Esposito. Now, Phil Esposito, maybe a lot of people don't realize that Phil Esposito got 76 goals, and he dropped down to 63 goals, and he said, you're having a bad year, eh, Phil? And we traded, and I remember when I first went there, then the back they had Jesus saves, and Esposito gets the rebound. I mean, right.
Because in Boston, I think it's North Boston, is a big Italian community, and Phil was like a god there because he Italian. And
he didn't expect to get traded.
No, and so when he got traded, I mean, that was like right out of the blue. That was a shock.
Well, it was Harry Sinden, boy, and what happened, one of the reasons was that I was one of the first guys to have the minute, about a minute and 10 minutes and a 15-minute shift.
The short shifts.
And he would not come off. I mean, he would never, ever, ever, ever come off. I remember if it went on for 5 minutes, he'd go for the face off, and be ready for the face off after 5 minutes, and I'd send out Andy Savard. I don't know why it was always Andy Savard, and he'd look at the crowd and he'd look as if to say, "Can you imagine taking me, Phil Esposito, off the ice for this dummy?" No, and Andy was a good guy. And I tell a story. Andy used to sit on the boards all the time with one leg over and one leg off. I know Andy used to be. And I said, Andy, I hear you're getting married this summer. He says, you'll never have kids because of this guy.
He's straddling the boards.
I can remember when you used to pull Phil off. And he'd be lined up for the draw.
Yeah.
And then you'd put Andy out there. And he would, I remember he'd always, he was the one that always adjusted his elbow pads, right?
Yeah, like
that. And then he'd look up at the clock, and then he'd saunter off, and I thought, oh, if he only knew.
Anyhow, that's right, one of the reasons he had to go. Yeah. Another guy.
But the fans all loved him.
And they, and you know, and they were probably right. Why are you taking him off the ice? But I mean, he didn't, 4 minute shift. I don't care. Nobody can go 4 minute shift. Bobby, he used to go, Bobby go about a minute and a half, and I'd hope he'd stay on 4.5 minutes. But we traded him and Savard for Rattel and Park and Joe Sanusi. Joe Sanusi said he was the biggest spare tire ever along there.
Yeah, filling and bad.
But. Yeah, and they wanted Dallas Smith. We wanted to give him Dallas Smith, and they wanted Vad. And Vad was a 20-goal scorer. That was a, that's a long story I'll tell you, but when Bobby left, I mean, it was unbelievable. I know we talked about the time Mooney came in and talked to him and everything, but, you know, if they had to listen, you think he, they disliked me so much, you think they'd have come to me because they knew Bobby and I were friends. You think they'd come to me and tell me what they wanted. That's things that I could never understand.
Because yeah, Bobby would have listened. He would have listened. Plus, you had did you have the same agents at that time?
Well, I knew Eagleson. Yeah, I guess yeah, sort of. Yeah,
yeah. You
come
did.
To think of it, but anyhow, they offered 18% of the club, which is worth $185 million today. $185 million today. I don't ever when I talked to Bobby, I never mentioned anything like that. But
Well, the fans were. I don't know if the fans were quite as in shock because it was going for a while in the papers,
yeah.
And everybody was hoping and praying that he'd stay. But like when he left, I think a lot of people.
Oh, it took us a long time to get back. Luckily, we were first by place club, but you know what Bobby told me one time. You know, we're having a coffee one time. He doesn't drink, but. We're having a coffee, and he said that he had been. I said, I'm going back. I'm coming back. He flew back from Chicago, he says. And he got out, and he was prepared to take the money. Imagine if he had taken the money. And it was in the paper that one of the guys in our organization said he was finished. That was it. He got back. He went right back on the plane again. You know, we won 9 out of 10 with him at Park on the points. I mean, you can't believe it, how they used to pass the puck back and forth. You get a penalty, it was an automatic one. And it was unbelievable. 9 out of 10. Now, if we took them to the 7th game without Bobby, and...
So what would you... like? Okay, if Bobby would have stayed, and you know he was having some injuries with or some problems with his knees, how would you have used him?
Okay, I would have had to sit and talk with him. And I would have said, now, Bobby, you're going to play the whole power play. I mean who works hard? I mean... The power play, I have to laugh. They take the first power play off, put on the second power play now after first minute. Oh, no kidding. So anyhow, you would have played the whole, you would have taken a regular shift, but I wouldn't have had him kill penalties because when he killed penalties, he used to block shots all the time. And I had to convince him, but I could have maneuvered. Nobody would have noticed like that, but that's the one thing I would have a problem with because he would want to kill penalties.
Man. Well, it was his birthday last week. So when was I don't even know if you ever told. When was the first time you saw him, like live?
You know, when I used to see him on television all the time, and you know, he roaring all over the ice and everything. And I was an old stay-at-home defenseman, and I'll never forget it. I played for the Rochester, making a comeback at 36, and we were had a morning skate, and they had a. I practiced, and they were going to leave about 4 o'clock.
So you were at the Boston Gardens?
At the Boston Gardens.
And you were going to play the Boston
Braves.
Yeah.
We were going to play the Boston Braves. So we were going for a morning skate. So I really didn't, you don't see much on television the same way. And so I went down, and the whole team walked in together, the bus walked in together. And he was out fooling around, like, you know, they were at the end of the practice, and I couldn't believe it. Like, there's only 3 guys I know that come close to him skating. I said close. One was Coffey. And Coffey seemed to glide on the ice the same way. I don't know what their skates, but he never went into traffic. If you ever noticed, if you noticed Coffey, he was smart. He used to go on the outside and he was, I mean, but Bobby would go right in the middle of traffic and, you know, you close your eyes. And the other guy that played reckless like him was Pavel Bure. Bure used to play like him too, and they could skate, but nobody could skate like Bobby.
Didn't you say something about the way he sharpened his skates was pretty unique too?
Well, when I first went there with Cash, Cashman came to me. Cash was like the straw boss. Who was the captain?
Busick. Who was it? Johnny Busick.
Oh, Johnny Busick.
A lot of people wouldn't even know what a straw boss is.
Well, a straw boss is a guy like if you have a construction outfit, you're going to have the main guy, and then you have the head of the laborers. There's always a, he doesn't get any more money, he doesn't do anything, but he's the straw. But if you want the laborers to work an extra hour, you have to go to these guys, and they call them straw bosses. So anyhow, Cashman came to me, and he says, Grapes, I hope you can really help us out. I said, what? He said, we have one stone for sharpening here. And I said, you're kidding. You're like, when I was in Rochester, we had three or four. And I said, you're kidding. He says, yeah. He says, and it's for Bobby, naturally. He said, he had the deepest hollow you couldn't believe. I went and checked his skates. You couldn't believe the hollow.
And what does that mean?
A hollow in the skates, when you have a deep hollow like that, that's how he could turn and twist and everything like that. But it was hard on his knees, eh? He was bow-legged to start
with. Because there wasn't a give. Is that it?
Yeah, like the hollow is the... like the groove between the two edges of the blade.
Okay.
So you have the left and right side of a blade.
So there's depths
of
that.
Deep, yeah.
Now, Eddie Shore, he used to slide. Believe it or not, he used to like to slide.
So he didn't have any hollow.
He didn't have any hollow. But Bobby had the deep, and the rest of the guys, they go to the trainers, nah, never mind, it's good enough for Bobby or it's good enough for you guys.
I could see that quote coming.
Yeah, and so I had them change all the hollows. Have different stones for different guys. And naturally, some guys took advantage of it. They always do. But Bobby had the deepest hollow. And that was one of the reasons that I feel that his knees went to him. And now, you know, and Bobby, and here I am talking about Bobby again. I keep talking. But, you know, he retired at 28 years old. And I often...
That's just kind of when defensemen are hitting their prime.
You're funny you say that. If you look at all the defensemen, Potvin and the great defensemen and Park and all those guys... And Coffee and all those guys, that's when they started to really come in, because it takes you that long to learn to play defense.
So let me ask, when Bobby went to Chicago, they didn't, like, they played him a lot to get their money's worth so the fans could see him?
I often think that Billy Ray was the coach there. And I remember we played, and Chicago had awful lives. They had awful lives to start with, but you can imagine what it's like at training camp. So we went there to play an exhibition game, and he played him 30 minutes.
So that must have been something for you to have the old Bruins play against Bobby.
No, I remember I said, don't anybody ever dump it in his corner.
Is that right? You said that.
And I said, it won't last till Christmas, because he was playing him in an exhibition game and against us.
To get their money's worth.
I don't know. But I often wondered if he liked them. And Bill Wirtz loved Bobby Hull so much, he introduced him and at the press conference as Bobby Hull, which didn't go over very good.
But I remember when you first saw Bobby Orr, you got me his autograph.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that
I forgot
must have been
to
a
tell.
Tough one.
So here I am, 36 years old. I'm an old grizzled vet, been playing 16 years, seen everybody, been to every camp, by the way. I've been to every camp, and I've seen them all, and I'm not going to start now. I've seen every superstar, so it's pretty tough to impress me. So I was absolutely dumbfounded. I never saw anything, It was like, I often think it must have been old Jim Fitzsimmons when he LaSalle Secretariat or something. I don't know. But anyhow, I was absolutely dumbfounded. So Mike Walton played for the Boston Bruins, and Rob Walton played for us. So I went down to the, I think of it now, you still got it. Yep. I went down to the pro shop, and I bought a picture of Bobby, and I asked Rob if he would ask Mike. Isn't that awful?
You're the coach.
I'm the coach. No, I'm not playing. The coach. I'm still a player.
Oh,
I'm still playing. And if he get an autograph of Bobby, and I think he's like, what did he say?
To Timothy, keep lifting the weights, Bobby Orr.
And you still have it?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
No, yeah, and it was beautiful. I had it framed. And I remember playing cards all the way back. We had to play the game and then sit on the bus all the way and play cards all the way back. And I thought, by God, I have Bobby Orr's on it.
Didn't your brother, Uncle Rich, he saw him early on. And then he told you about him, eh?
He was a rookie. same time as Bobby Orr was a rookie. Mm. And he says, and I talked to him. He was at the training camp, Richard. And he says, you can't believe this kid. He says, he's 18 years old. He says, yeah. And he says, but he's going to get it. He says, he does things that nobody else does. He says, and you know how he's going to get it? He's going between the boards, and he leaves his leg. And that's exactly what happened. And a lot of people think it was a lot of guys. I think it was Marcel Pronobon nailed him his leg. That was started. And now the operations they had then, it was 8 inches long. Now it would be about half an inch. They could go in and clean it out. It's so sad. I think the very first guy that did the thing, but boy, does it sound like I like Bobby Orr?
Yeah, but this is interesting things that people don't realize. I can remember when we were, remember Norman Road when you were coaching them and we lived on Norman Road, this that tiny
little bungalow. Oh yeah, 14 Norman Road. Yeah, I didn't know the house. I thought it was great. I got the house, and I didn't realize all the single guys got that house.
Yeah, yeah, because they didn't know if you were going to stay or not. They gave you this little tiny, tiny little bungalow.
It was two bedrooms, and then you kind of slept in the...
I sort of slept in this room down on the first floor, which had the only phone. And I could remember after a hockey game, after the first game or second game, whatever, and the phone would ring. This is after the game. Like, it'd be 11, 12 o'clock at night, and I'd get up because I was the only one down the first floor sleeping. And Cindy... Yes, Bob. And Bobby always says his name is Bob.
Yeah, he never calls himself Bobby.
He never calls himself Bobby Orr. Yeah, Bobby Orr. Oh, yeah. Get your dad. Okay. So I go upstairs and I whisper and I go into your room. Dad. Yeah, what? I go, it's Bobby. And you jump out of bed. There's nothing wrong. Nothing happened to him, did it? I go, no. He just wants to talk to you. So you
He never slept, eh?
He never slept. Would go by the hour after each game, he'd call. I used to call my midnight boyfriend because I knew that he would call practically every night after a game.
And you know that year, a lot of people, and I'm going to say it again, and I want you to think of it. As a defenseman, I know there's some guys out there. Your son's playing defense and that. Think of this. He got 46 goals, 89 assists, plus 123. Now, the guy who'll win it this year will get about 20 goals. What do you figure? About 20 goals? Maybe. Well, not this year because.
Yeah.
But if it had, the year had gone, he got 20 some goals. He would have got about 40, 50 assists and been.
He might have been a minus. You never know. Yeah, nowadays.
But remember the first time you met him, Tim? When you come in, remember I took you to training camp?
Yeah. And well, that was because I remember.
Tell the story too. I'm interrupting like Dad now. Tell the story about him taking you fishing.
Yeah. Well, the first time I met him was I went to training camp and you said, I said, is Bobby Orr here? And well, to even go back a bit further, you called up and you said, Tim, I'm going to coach the Boston Bruins. And I said, does that mean I get to meet Bobby Orr? And you said, yeah, I guess, me too. So
I'm just as happy.
So I went and you said, I said, is Bobby here? And you said, no, he left. And I was, ugh, you know, so, but I turned around the corner and there, I remember he was working on a stick.
He was sitting on the stairs, yeah.
Yeah, and you said, hello. And I said, hello, Mr. Orr. And I just about fainted.
Remember this? And I made you sing a song.
Oh, yeah, that was in front of Phil and everybody.
Do you remember that name?
Yeah, I don't
know. You want to sing it?
No.
Why?
I don't remember.
Just name the title. What was it?
Well, it was C-H-E-R-R-Y is a name called Cherry. Oh, browse all the nut, proud of all the Irish blood that's in me. Dibble Amanda, say a word again me. C-H-E-R-R-Y is a name you see. Is a name that shame never has been connected with. Cherry. That's me.
Yep. So I had to sing that.
That would be embarrassing.
In front of Bobby Orr and Phyllis Pizzito.
Bobby's all by himself.
No, there was a bunch of guys there.
Were there?
Yeah. But I remember he,
that's to Harrigan, by the way.
Yep. That he likes to fish and he knew that I liked to fish. So he called up and he says, you know, he was going to take me fishing for deep sea fishing for bluefish. And so it really was raining, and he called up that night, and he said, we're not going to go because it's raining. And I was so disappointed. But then I guess it cleared up. So he called at 6 in the morning and said, let's go fishing. Joe Palladino picked us up and drove us to the boat. So we go out all day, and we haven't caught a thing. It's like all day. We're out for 8 hours and nothing. And so the captain's going bananas because he says, Bobby Orr's on my boat. I've never been skunked, and I'm getting skunked. And he's just like, he's on the radio. You guys got to, where are the fish? You guys got to help me out with the fish. He was just like, I thought he was going to jump, commit suicide. So we're on our way back, and it's getting kind of late. It's about 8 o'clock at night, and we run into a big school of bluefish. So we've been fishing all day. So we're there, and we stay out till almost 9:30 at night.
Oh.
And there's, you can't believe the amount, like, and then what happened was somebody drove by in a boat and said, hey, there's Bobby Orr, and got on his radio. So next thing you know, there's got to be 50 boats around us because Bobby's on the boat, and they're cutting across our fishing lines, and the captain's going bananas. But we catch a whole bunch of fish and everything. But we get to the dock. It's got to be 10 o'clock, and we drive, you know, it's, we were, you know, probably another 45 minutes to home. So it's almost 11:30 by the time we get home. And back then, there's no cell phones or anything,
right?
So that's just, you know, you went. So I get to the door. It opens and Bobby's there, and we have some fish with us. And Dad goes, where were you? Where were you guys? Your mother was worried. Your mother was worried. Mom goes, what do you mean? I was worried. I was worried about Timothy. You were worried about Bobby.
No, that's not true.
But you couldn't believe the amount of boats that when once people found out that he was on the boat.
Joe Palladino was the guy that he owned the bar number 4, eh? Joe was in the horses too, eh?
Oh, Joe, he owned a great string of horses right around the barn where I used to work with Jerry's horses, and they shared the barn. He was on one side and we were the other.
Yeah, I remember Harry coming to me and he says, I don't want the guys going to number 4 anymore. Go tell the guys they can't go to number 4. They've been going there since way before I come. So I said, if you want to tell them, you tell them they can't go to 4.
I remember the one story you tell about Bobby too was poor Davy Reese. Remember you were, Bobby was.
That wasn't very good. I did some stupid things. And so he was kind of ticked at Bobby a little bit. Not ticked, but he happened to mention.
So what happened was Bobby was on the ice by himself and.
No, he was practicing.
He was practicing.
Yeah, David happened to say to me, he says, you know, Bobby comes in and hits my pad every time.
Oh.
He's not doing me any favors, right?
No, he didn't.
He knew
really
that Bobby Orr could score on him any time he wanted.
Well, yeah, but he didn't mean anything by it, and I thought it'd be funny.
Oh.
And I went to Bobby and I said, you know, Bobby, I said, yeah, Dave's trying to improve. And I said, you going to hitting his pad all the time, you know, going down hitting his pad.
Now, this is tongue in cheek. You're kidding, right?
No, I wasn't. I let on I was. I was serious to him.
Oh, okay.
And he thought I was serious. And he says, you really say that? And I says, yeah. And he didn't say that. Geez, it was ping, bang, zing, bang, zing, bang, and it was going in all over the place. So I had to go finally tell him to stop.
But you've often said that's the time to really see Bobby when there was nobody in the stands.
If nobody was in the stands.
He was fooling around.
When nobody was in the stands, I remember it was in Minnie. We had an early practice with nobody in the stand, and he felt like fooling around. It was unbelievable, like the things he could do. I mean, with the puck, but he would only do it if there was somebody cleaning up or somebody watching. He wouldn't do. He would never do anything. He was the first one that could touch the puck with a stick and hand the puck to the, you know how they pull it. You know,
oh yeah,
and
they do hand all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, he was the first one. He didn't have to do it. He just touched the puck and handed it to him. Then everybody saw that he was doing it. One time, this is a true story. I know we're going. How'd we get going on Bobby?
Well, but it was his birthday, so we're telling him.
Oh, it's birthday, yeah. So this is a true story. They were in Washington one time, and it wasn't a very good club, and it was a face-off in Washington's end, and the centerman turned to the defenseman and told the defenseman to move 5 feet. And the guy looked at Bobby, and Bobby went like that, don't move. Hey, Daddy, stayed where Bobby. Mm-hmm. Not where a centerman was, it was where Bobby told him move, the puck came right to him.
I remember one time watching him, and he got the puck behind the net, and he was flipping the puck with a stick. Like, you see the guys do it now, but he was flipping the puck with the stick, and he was right around the one net, and he flipped it really high, and then he turned his stick sideways, you know, so you could hit it with like with the heel, and he hit the puck and the heel, and it went all the way, it flew all the way down, and went to the net.
Oh.
It was just, it was like
a lacrosse move.
It was
almost.
Like a lacrosse. Yeah.
I saw this. I know this is hard to believe. This is one that's hard to believe. But I used to be one of the first guys on the ice sometimes when we were on the road. So Vad was out first. Carl Vadney was out first. And I was out second. And it was in L.A. And it was around 4 o'clock. We were out about 10 to. They hadn't turned the lights on yet. It was sort of stuck. And Bobby come up. Bobby used to have nosebleeds a lot. I don't know what happened there. But anyhow, the pucks were in the... Now, you have to listen to this. The pucks were in the far corner and behind the net. And Bobby hit the puck, and it flipped in the air. And he hit it back. He hit it, you know, over his shoulder, hit the puck. And somehow it went, I saw them do it I think they can do it in soccer. The puck went come out and went in the far corner. So I thought I saw it, and I, you know, it was a little dark. So Vad said to me, he said, "Did you just see what I just saw?" And I said, "I couldn't believe it." And he actually, now you get this right. He hit the puck when the pucks were in the far corner, and as he skated out, he hit the puck and went up in the air, and he hit it back with his, he wasn't showing off or anything. They didn't think anybody was there watching, and the puck went along the goal line and went out and went in the
top corner. Curled into the net.
Curled around. How could a puck curl around the post? And I said to Vad, I said, "You just see what I just saw." But I got to tell you one more story. We're talking that this is a great story, or I think it's a great story. Boston's playing in L.A. or Oakland, in which it was an awful club. And he's killing a penalty, and he drops his glove. He knocked the glove off, and it was at center ice. So he's got the puck, and he used to, when he killed penalties, he'd go behind the net, you'd chase him, he'd go out in front, and he had the puck the whole 2 minutes. So he's skating backwards with the puck. He reaches down and puts his glove on. This is hard to believe. He puts his glove on. He goes behind the net, roars down the right side, shoots the puck, and I saw this on tape, and he shoots the puck, and you know the goalie kind of juggle it a little, and as he was behind the net, he hit it and went in the top corner. Now I told that at a party one time, and the guy Gary Smith said, "That's true, Grapes." I says, "How do you know?" He says, "I was a goalie."
You know,
Gary
Dad,
Smith,
you,
Gary
you...
Suitcase Smith.
You mention Carol Vadney a lot, and in these talks, and people don't realize what you and him are pretty good friends. And
yeah.
Tell him what he did for you with your ring.
Yeah,
there.
I'm wearing it right now. We're at Team Canada, and we just traded him too. He was a great guy, Carol Vadney. Andy Savard used to say, "When you see Vad, you see Grapes. When you see Grapes, you see Vad." And I hate to tell you, one time I used to, when I was with the Team Canada, I used to put the, when I, you know, supper would come and that, or dinner, lunch would come, I'd put, and he said, "Donnie," he showed, if you look, and I don't think anybody else would know it, at Air Canada, there's the napkins there, serviettes.
It's like a little buttonhole.
There's a little buttonhole that you can put, you know.
Like, who knew that?
Well, who knew that? He knew it.
He's a classy guy.
Yeah, he sure was
a
classy guy.
So he had to enlighten you on that.
Yeah, dummy. So I was a dummy. So we were at Team Canada, and he said, "I'm going to my jeweler. Imagine I'm the jeweler. And I said, "Well," he said, "do you want to go along?" So I go along. And when we won the Calder Cup, we had three little pieces of glass put in. They were so cheap, they'd turn green. And I said to the guy, "Maybe I'll put a little chip in there." So he took it and said something to the guy in French. And
so it was your Calder Cup ring?
Calder Cup, yeah.
We won the American Hockey League.
Yeah, we won three in a row when I was with Rochester. So I went back in about two or three weeks. there's a guy give me one with a great big diamond in the middle. I said, I can't afford this. I said, he said, don't worry about a thing. He says, it's all taken care of. Monsieur Vadney took care of it. And what happened was when he got one, when they won the Calder Cup, it was too big. Vad wouldn't wear something like that. Carol Vadney wouldn't wear something like that. He had all the diamonds taken out and had a little ring made for Raymond, his wife. And he had told a guy in French, he says, take that big diamond, put it in grapes.
From his Stanley Cup ring. Mm.
It was actually a Stanley Cup diamond in there.
Wow. Isn't that something, eh? Now, that's a true friend.